This January, the Ballad of Hard Work will begin. We see a barren world and the sky filled with lights as 15 characters arrive to help teach this place how to love again. This January, come along with us in The Heart is a Dungeon as a different type of story begins.
Listening to Tales Yet Told, an actual play show dealing in horrific and often heavy topics and themes at the intersection of queerness and horror. Content warnings, list of cast and crew, and other relevant links can be found in the description. Viewer discretion is advised.
October 8th, 85 AE. Do you ever feel like you're going mad, diary? I'll keep this brief, because apparently I have a lot of work I need to do. There are 26,374 stories that I need to set straight, according to the system. I went to see it earlier, trying to get to the bottom of all my missing stories. And Cornwall. It didn't even let me get through a sentence before it started pulling up all this footage. Scenes of the violet sun and what it did to everyone. The chaos. The writhing. It's becoming too much for the system to bear, apparently. So I need to set things straight. Get some stories back on the right path, and in exchange, it'll give me my stories. It admitted that it had taken them under the stranger's directive, though it wouldn't or couldn't tell me why. I assume that's the stranger's directive as well. He's hiding something from me, diary. Something I did, or something he must have made me do. Something that he couldn't trust me with remembering. Me, his most faithful of servants. Me, who has been nothing but devoted to him, obedient to him, even after he became boring, writing his silly little stories of office melodramas and tragic childhoods. I could have been writing epics, but no. No. He wanted things to be boring. Why? I'll do what the system asks. I'll fix all these stories, set everyone back on the right path, so I can reclaim what was taken from me and get to the bottom of this once and for all.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tales Yet Told, an actual play podcast focused on telling stories at the intersection of queerness and horror using NDT TRPGs. I am your host, with the most love for Butter Toast, I guess. Not Lil Harry, but Kendrick or Kendo, whichever you prefer. And with me today are the most absurdest little freaks I've ever met. Rara, tell us who you are, who you plan.
Hey, I'm Rara, and I might be wounded. I'm not sure by that, but I'm playing Letha. I go by they, he pronouns, and so does Letha, so that should be easy for you. I think we'll probably bounce it over to Darby next. Darby, how you doing? Welcome to the studio.
Hi, hello. I'm so happy to be here. My name is Darby, and I am playing Clementine, who uses, both of us use she, they pronouns. And that's what I remember we were supposed to talk about. So, Beth is the last person in the studio. Kelly!
Hi. Hi, I'm Kelly. I use she, they pronouns. And I will be Virgil Bradley, who uses he, him pronouns.
Amazing. And you know what? I'm just going to take this little the little talking cushion that we've just been passing around the studio, because it's my turn to talk now. Hey, everybody. Hey, this is an episode of Our Lives in the Wood. If you couldn't tell by the title, a continuation of our anthology series of tales found deep within the sublime. And this time we're playing a game called Absurdia, a game of surrealist suburban horror by my good friend Quinn Majeski. I do have to check to make sure that's his name. You can cut this part out if you want. That'd be great, actually. I would love if
no
you did
cats.
That.
Keep it in.
Cats, don't listen
this
to Darby.
Real.
Cats, keep
this
it
is
in.
Real.
Hey. Cats, remember who pays you. Thank
that's,
you.
Okay, that's Cass.
Keep it in.
I will also pay you.
If you sound as I do,
Cass getting quadruple
we'll all pay
the pay.
You, Cass.
Zach is going to be upset.
Zach doesn't need to know.
Zach doesn't need to know. Yeah, Quinn Majeski, I was right. Okay, you can keep all of this in. but yes, this is a game that I've been really wanting to play for the longest because it's the kind of game that fits exactly into our cozy little world of the sublime, which is ultimately, I would say, a series of absurdist suburban horror. So it kind of fits right in. Yeah, right? So, is there any other lead up I need to do with this? No, not really. I think you all will learn how to play this game as we continue to play it. It's a Powered by the Apocalypse game, so it's going to be a 2d6 plus whatever stat for doing the moves that are either available to everyone or available simply to your playbook. All right. Well, I mean, hold on. I was about to get us in there, but I just remembered. Hey, Kelly.
Yeah.
You're playing the Paradox, which means your move is one that has to start first. Could you read the trigger for your move and then let's, I guess, do it?
Absolutely. So for Temporal Anomaly, you experience time differently, not as a linear progression, but a constant swirl of past, present, and future. At the beginning of each disturbance, roll plus chaos. You want me to keep going?
Yeah, no, just roll plus chaos, and we'll see what you get.
Do you want me to declare the event yet or no?
You will declare the event after we know how much hold you have.
Okay. Fair
because
enough.
You.
Oh yeah,
because
I may not.
Hold,
that's so fair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've gotten 8, so I hold 1.
Okay, you hold 1, which means you can either declare it now or you can declare it at any point during the game about a specific event that happens in the future, and you will gain bonuses trying to meaningfully make that event transpire.
Okay, I'll hold on to it for now.
Okay.
We'll see how Virgil feels.
We'll see how Virgil and the sublime feel.
I was a girl with dreams so wide, eyes full of wonder, heart open, untied. The world seems such a place to play. Ran through the days in the sun's but somewhere along the road, I felt the shift. The days turned happy like an unseen rift. The girl that I was began to fade.
Our camera fades in and we see a light at the end of the tunnel, or a well, as we're surrounded by dark walls of stone covered in moss and a slick, sparkly moisture. There's a rope leading upwards or forwards, dragging us along with it as it makes its ascent. We see as we rise and rise and rise at the rhythm of someone pulling up a bucket. Where is this tunnel leading us? Is it to paradise or to hell? Would we even know the difference once we got there? As we and the bucket rise from somewhere far too deep, we find ourselves in a brightly lit room with a carpet so lush and green you could swear it was grass. Blooming flowers dot the floor along the room, and along its edges is an elongated altar covered in stacks and stacks of cold, hard cash. This is the room of preparation, lying in the heart of this church. And at the heart of the heart is a well that goes far too deep. We see the final moments of Brother Todd Plemons as he secures the rope holding up the bucket. He's a black man with a graying beard and thick round glasses, clad in the traditional robes of his faith and a serious, focused look on his face. We watch silently as he moves with practiced, almost ritualistic movements, unhooking the bucket, pausing, whispering something far too holy for us to hear, and then turning to you, Virgil. Who does our camera see standing opposite of Brother Plemons and holding the gold-plated decanter that yearns to be filled?
Virgil is probably clocking in at about 5'8". He's a neatly kept young man, a very neat, tidy haircut of chestnut brown hair. You can see if it would be allowed to grow, maybe it would be curly. You see a slight wave in the way that he's combed it back, but surely we can't let ourselves seem unseemly. I mean, we are in service of the stranger here. He's wearing a trim, white button-down shirt, freshly pressed short sleeves. He has like a gold tie with a very predictable yet beautiful design on it, and deep green slacks, also seemingly freshly pressed. Nicely worn in brown shoes with a belt to match. Nothing too gaudy, everything just as it should be in service of the people here.
And in service of the people here, we see Brother Plemons pour from the bucket and into the decanter a bright, sparkly purple liquid that came from somewhere far too deep. This is the source of all that is good and holy in this world. These are the sublime waters which will purify the soul, the spirit, and all that it touches. This is a motion and a practice and a ritual that you have done every week for as long as this body can remember. How does Virgil feel going through these motions, preparing communion for today's service?
I think you see the liquid reflected in his hazel eyes as he stares down at it. And though his expression is one of commitment and service and dedication, inside it is simply, I have to do this. I must go through these motions. This is my life. This is my role, who I'm meant to be. Surely this is who I'm meant to be. I can keep doing this. I'll just keep doing this.
And we watch as the decanter is filled. And Brother Plemon slowly stops pouring. The bucket is empty now. And we hear him whisper something far too holy for us to hear beneath his breath. And he looks to you and nods, motioning for you to take the decanter back through the labyrinthian halls and up to the top, where the church is, and where service should be held very soon. He doesn't say anything to you. He seems distracted in this moment, like he's got other things on his mind, but perhaps he's just praying you're not quite sure.
Brother Plemon, if I may, is everything all right?
Of course, Brother Virgil. Forgive me. It's been a very hard week in the light of Sister May's passing.
Sister May, of course. I'm sorry I asked. We're all feeling...
Of course you all are. I understand that. We are all feeling the weight of this tragic loss.
Truly tragic.
I can only wonder how such a hole could ever be filled, both in our church and within the sublime. Without a healer, who can the people look towards?
I mean, I hate to say it in light of such a recent, unfortunate loss, but do you think one of our own might step up?
You see a thought cross his face. It's not a foreign thought, or at least not one that you put in his head. It's one he saw before, and it crosses his face, and you get the sense of something that edges on pride, hubris even, before fading away. I wouldn't dare to assume what the stranger will choose.
That's true. I shouldn't have even... It's a bit bold of me to bring it up.
No. I think that it only seems right, and perhaps at this point fitting, for another one of our flock to perhaps take up that role. Who else knows the glory of the sublime and the stranger more than us? Of course.
That's true. We've got a lot of good people here.
A lot of good people. And he puts a hand on your shoulder. It's tight and warm, like the feeling of someone trying to impose comfort on you. I will finish up here, and we'll be upstairs shortly.
All right, I'll go get ready for service.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
And our camera watches as you turn and leave this room, heading back upwards. But our camera lingers here for a moment, watching Brother Plemons as he watches you go. And a smile sneaks across his face. A look of pride. A look of hubris. Fully fleshed. And he begins to whistle as he walks towards one of the side altars of this room, taking a stack of cash, maybe $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, and tosses them into the bucket and lowers it back into the well. Nothing comes without sacrifice. And our camera moves from this place and up the stone steps past where Virgil walks and leads through this maze of corridors that make up the inner guts of the Path of the Followers Church. And up towards the surface, where we see a crowd of people slowly pouring into this gorgeous church with high vaulted ceilings and gorgeously crafted filigree, stained glass windows, and statues worthy of only the stranger himself and his followers. All seven of them lined along the back wall, encircling a large statue of the stranger himself, bold, slick back hair and a smile that shines like the sun. And as our camera moves through this place, seeing as people are taking their seats, where do we see you, Letha and Clementine? Who does our camera fall on first?
I think they might fall on Clementine first. You see a rather composed figure, a pressed white shirt, white blouse, with brown hair tied back into a bun that's tied with a red ribbon, a similarly red ribbon around her throat, gold-rimmed glasses, and black dressy pants, sitting, legs crossed, arms folded over the knee, lightly tapping her index finger in beat with the seconds of the clock.
There's a clock in this room. It's not close enough that you should be able to hear it, but as our camera sits with you, Clementine, it's almost as if we can't help but count the seconds. and you tap and tap and tap along with the seconds and your heartbeat, so in sync with the time of this world. And as our camera moves from you to who is sitting or standing beside you, when we see Letha, who do we see?
Even when he's sitting down, you can tell that Letha casts a long shadow, and not just on the outside. There is a tussle of dark blue-black hair, light brown skin, and a bored look. He's looking between the roundness of the faces and the hard angles of the architecture, and something in the middle of those two just doesn't fit quite right. He's got a large, puffy, like green jacket that goes down to his knees, and pants a little too tight and shoes a little too big, just to make the entire ensemble a little even in how it's right and how it's wrong. So he is sitting here watching all these people, also guessing at what is right and what is wrong, while every once in a while looking over to Clem and knowing that some things are just right.
As you're looking around at all the other people in the church, you get a sense of mixed emotions. There's a lot of tension here, a lot of sorrow, and a lot of grief. The Sublime has been through a lot as of late, and many of the people here have lost more than their fair share. But there's also a lot of joy to be had in sharing this time with all of these people in such a beautiful place like the church and the Sublime. Is there anything going on in either of your minds, anything that you're worried about, anything that you're hopeful for as this day continues to move forward and time continues to move and people continue to talk and sit?
I think Clementine is watching how people's hair moves as they sit and as they breathe. She's watching how a child a few seats over is biting their nails and then surreptitiously dropping them to the ground, and just thinking how much force it took for that bite to go through.
For someone who understands the physics of this place, it is almost impossible not to see it everywhere. There is everything being rendered all at once. There are so many forces at hand here, puppeting things in ways that no one other than you and it would know. Can I get you to make an assess reality roll as you pay very close attention to the things happening here?
Absolutely.
Okay. Am I smart? No.
Are you smart? What's your wits? What's your wits looking like?
I got a nice little negative one in wits.
Ooh, so this should be good for you. Don't forget, you can always spend an essence to get advantage, if you want.
What happens when I spend an essence?
Well, when you spend an essence, you can use it to either get advantage on a roll or to avoid all harm from a single attack. Or you can also use it when a playbook move tells you to. And spending one doesn't really do much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing wrong with spending one essence at any given time, but after you've spent all of your essences, you will be removed from the scene and can return later, but with a fracture.
Woof.
Something will change about you after having used all your essence.
Something has changed with me. Something's not the same. Okay. Son of a biscotti! 8.
Okay.
Because of that negative one.
Oh. Well, on a 7 to 9, you get to hold one, and you can ask any of those questions on the list, including what happened here, what's my best route, are there any dangers I haven't noticed, what here is useful or valuable to me, what here is not what it appears to be, or who or what is really in control here.
Okay. Okay, 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 okay. I mean, I don't need to ask who or what is really in control here, because I know.
Of course, we all know.
We all know. But I would like to know, what here is not what it appears to be?
As you look around this room, gazing at all of the beauty that it has wrought in all of its motion and all of its rendering. You know better than anyone that one of the hardest things to do in the sublime is make sure that time keeps ticking. Second by second by second by second, there's always something moving that train along, and you keep the time with perfect rhythm in your heart and in your blood and in the tapping of your fingers. And then you notice something is wrong, because you can hear the clock ticking and it's not matching your rhythm. Something is wrong with time nearby, and you're not quite sure why.
Can I push to make my heart beat louder? Not to anyone around me, but to the person I know who is always kind of watching, always keeping an eye, and I'm hoping is keeping a closer eye on me, as I wish that they would.
Oh, to make the heart beat fonder and louder, just to make sure that they can hear. I imagine that there's some things about yourself that you can control. There are some lingering parts of its essence within you. You might be able to control yourself better than anyone else possibly could. So if you wanted your heart to beat louder, you could. And maybe it'll hear you.
I'd love to do that, because maybe the system is overtaxed. So I'm just reminding them, because I keep perfect time for them. For no one else. I keep perfect time for them, so if it's off here, they can reset to the time that I keep myself.
Okay. This might be you embracing chaos.
Yes.
What does it look like to Letha, who's sitting right next to you, as you start to try to take this small bit of control over your body and the world? Can they tell?
I think it's subtle, but all the dust in the air near Clementine stops moving. It's hard to see, but if the sunlight is hitting just right, the dust motes that usually swirl and move with the ambient air as people breathe in and breathe out and cause eddies of motion that you can't normally see, all of that dust is just perfectly still.
Roll plus chaos.
Yes! I like this.
As Letha, you begin to notice these telltale signs. I'm not sure how often it is Clem does things like this, but I'm sure that you've started to notice when things just get weird.
I definitely notice, but I don't notice when. That's always the issue, voice in my head, is I just don't always notice when. So right now there is all this dust frozen in these sheets of light, but while looking at it, I remember the same place being filled with sheets of light back when the ground was still straw and dirt, and just the footsteps of the devout made this dust and pollen fill the air. So though it's coming from beside me, it's also coming from before me, and I'm sort of thinking about both in this moment.
What it is to think about both. Well, what did you roll?
Hell yeah. I rolled an 11.
On a 10 plus, you will choose 2 from the list below. Your choices are things such as gaining a clear understanding of the power's source, effects, and motives, if anything. You quell the power's effect or fan its flames. You briefly wield this power's effect. You subvert this power to achieve your own ends, take plus 1 forward. You inflict or heal 1 harm on a nearby target, or you mark or erase 1 essence. And I will tell you that the power that you're tapping to in this moment, as you're feeling as time goes a little strangely, is you are feeling its power. It is here, somewhere, in the same way that it is always here, but now the system is here, manifesting somewhere nearby, though you can't see it. What do you choose to do? You have 2 choices.
Interesting. I would love to gain a clear understanding of the power's source, effects, and motives, because I want to know why time is funky. And I would love to just briefly...
Would you like me to answer the first question before you make your second choice?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. You know the system more than most people do. You've spent the most time with it in the way that it even allows itself to spend time with anyone. You know that when time does this, when time begins to slow, it is because the system is manifesting somewhere. It needs to speak to someone. And that is an arduous task, a thing that takes it away from the precious, precious, precious duty of making sure the sublime actually works. If it's manifesting somewhere, then it must be serious.
Do I know that it is that the system is manifesting close to me, like within this church, or just anywhere in the sublime?
It must be close. There's no reason to slow time for the entire sublime. In fact, that's far more taxing. Usually when the system is manifesting anywhere, it's very localized in order to disturb as little as possible. It loathes to do this.
Are the people around me, like, as time is slowing, are people slowing as well? Like, their motions moving slower as the seconds go longer?
Oh, you would notice such a thing, would you? You see, as the nail falls ever slowly, you watch as the light reflects off of someone's gorgeously oiled hair, just a little strangely, reflecting in ways it often couldn't, because light and time don't bend that way. You are watching as the world, as Letha, as you are beginning to slow. And in this moment, as you're embracing chaos, you know that there are various things that you can do as your hands are wrapped around the wheel, and maybe you can stop yourself slowing if you wanted.
Oh, you read my mind. I would love to subvert this power to achieve my ends and take +1 forward. I'd like to not slow myself because I want to see the system so badly. I need to... If they're speaking to somebody... Surely it must be me.
So you will it, and so it shall be. In this moment, you also have the choice, as you have the strength and the power and the will to make sure that you can still move in time. Do you give Letha the same boon, or do you leave them behind?
Huh. I think as a byproduct of not being able to quite control the steering wheel, Letha, also, I can't keep a bubble that tight around myself. Letha is with me. I know this. Did I want it?
Out of character. To be clear, you're leaving Letha out.
I'm bringing Letha in.
Bringing Letha in. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I can't
just making
pull,
sure.
Yeah. I can't pull that bubble in so tight. Hence the dust, like, freezing around me. So I think just pulling... Letha's coming along. Whether Clementine knows that Letha is here, but whether Clementine wanted that to be the case or not.
Yeah, no, so fair. Letha, you watch as well as the world begins to slow around you and you begin to speed back up to your normal speed in such a way that you are only just now telling that you weren't always moving at your normal speed. You can tell that things are slowing down, except for you and for Clementine.
And I haven't experienced a similar action before, or is this a first?
That's a good question.
I think this is the first that you can remember.
In all my remembrances, dear Kendo, or just this one?
In all of your remembrances.
And there's a moment on their face because something feels unique. Something feels like maybe a first time, and that is definitely worth taking a look around, nodding again at all the round faces and looking at Clem, and is this you, or is this me, or is this us?
It's me, but I had a little help. I guess us moving like this is me. The rest of it is Someone special.
He's loading a blank cassette into the small handheld video camera that he carries in his side bag.
What do you do? The world has slowed down around you. Everything slowed to a stop in a little bit grayscale.
Where is the system?
That's a wonderful question. And I think with your embracing of the chaos and feeling this slowing down, you probably have a general sense that it is somewhere nearby. Perhaps somewhere deeper. In the bowels of the church.
While Clem's thoughts are going to a tree, Letha's are still on the forest and are slowly walking through the slow crowd of people just videotaping their faces in that grainy, like, 8-bit looking old film. You can hear the whir of the camera and the slow steps of the feet through the spot as he just makes jokes in his head about freeze frames and still motion and things of that sort, not realizing that Clem has an agenda in this moment.
Letha, as you're walking around with your video camera, getting a good sense of the situation, I would love it if you could assess reality.
I think I will, because I'm getting a good sense of the situation.
Of course. Then roll plus wits.
That was only a 6 on the die, and my wit is 1, so...
So that would bring you to a 7. Mm-hmm. You can always spend an essence to get advantage on this roll and potentially get something higher.
I think I will. You know, I think I will. Okay, a little better. That turns it to a 10 with a plus 1.
Okay, don't forget to mark one of your essences. And on a 10, you get to hold 2, meaning you get to ask 2 of those questions. But you don't have to ask them all now. You can hold those for later if you want.
And what was that? Was looking into the...
Assess reality.
Assess reality.
This is basically, you can ask any question about what's going on in this main room where all of these churchgoers are, and even some of the other, workers for the church who are setting up for service as well. Not everyone has made it to the top here, but there's a decent amount of people here.
All right, back in the podcast voice. And you said I get 2.
You have 2, which you don't have to ask all at once.
I think I know which questions I want to hold on to, even if I don't ask them right now. But the first one would definitely be, what happened here? And the second would certainly be, who or what is really in control here?
The answer to your first question is that time has stopped.
Time has stopped.
Which isn't a thing that you've seen before, but it's something that you've probably heard of or maybe watched in a film before. This feels like something out of a movie. Everyone is frozen still. Even the dust in the air refuses to fall. Everything is still. Except for you and Clementine. And Clementine seems to know why, and maybe had a little bit of control over that. Well, it certainly seems that she did, at least.
I think they think about light, and on whether or not everything else has slowed, or if they're just moving so fast that everything feels like a slowness, and they almost hope it's the latter, to feel more like a star and less like a patient stone or a mountain. But continuing to film all of these wonderful extras in this little movie I'm making about time and space, I will look over to Clem and make sure to get them in the film frame while paying attention to Clem's demeanor, knowing that they may not be having as enjoyable time as myself because they might actually understand dangers in this moment.
In the answer to your second question, as you ponder about, well, what is it? Who is this very special person that Clementine has referenced? Who is it that could stop time in the sublime? And then you feel it, a ripple, as something somewhere, maybe below you, changes, shifts. The world moves and breathes to reflect a pebble dropped in a lake. It's somewhere beneath you, whoever is in control of the time.
Now that felt familiar, but not to me. I think I'll approach Clem with a lightheartedness as a mask or a facade in this moment. Like, so, Clem, it's just the two of us. What do you want to say to all the viewers?
Well, everything in service of this stranger, I guess. So Clem is so unfocused, which is rather uncharacteristic for Clem, especially as of late. Her eyes are trained down to where she can sense the system down below, almost like she's staring through the floor, like it's not there, but it's sort of tracking how the fastest path to get down to where they are would be from here.
You see, there's a door halfway open that someone has just walked out of. It hasn't closed yet, you know, because of time and all. And you're pretty sure it leads somewhere deeper in the church.
I think Clementine, without taking her eyes off of the ground, is walking towards that door, just gently sliding around people, around things that don't seem to make sense, but it's larger chunks of dust or things that, if displaced, could cause issue with time being frozen.
Do you follow, Letha?
Well, it happens to Letha again. When they're looking at that door, they remember the dream, the three things they cannot forget, and one of them is a door that will not close, and they watch this door not moving, unmoving, this fucking door right here in front of them, and they wonder if they even could close it. And they see Clem's, like, silhouette walking towards it, something so much faster than the steelness of this door, and he wonders about what doors are for, and then they remember what doors are for, and they begin walking after Clem, but all of this is confusing because it feels familiar to me and not to my broader understanding. So I happily follow Clem, though I am unnerved, and even that feels exciting.
And the two of you begin to work your ways into the bowels of the church, where our camera moves past you, going deeper, deeper still, to Virgil, who's still walking up, unfazed by the freezing of time. In fact, do you even know that time is frozen?
I think that's a mighty fine question.
What is it about this space that eventually lets you know that something's wrong?
I think maybe as I make my way up to the service, there's something about how the light would typically reach where I walk, where my feet touch the ground. And the light is hitting the walls and the floors in funny ways. Ways that don't quite make sense. Something's amiss.
Something is amiss. And you know this for a fact when you start to feel the air hiss. Almost like there's a static that can't quite be discharged. You can feel it as the hairs rise on the back of your neck, and you can feel everything standing on end. There's a feeling in the air as energy begins to build, and you feel the world split in front of you, the air separated and filled with something far more necessary. As a body, bright and blinding like light, stands in front of you, as if edited into the world at this very moment, at this very particular time. They're basically featureless. It is a body built out of necessity, with no eyes, ears, nose, or mouth, no fingers or skin to make it distinct like every other human being. It is just a body of light. That's all it needs to be for it to be able to speak to you.
Virgil.
Yeah?
Need a favor.
Oh. Have we met?
Virgil, no time.
And you see that it begins to reach its hand towards you, as if to fully palm your face. Do you let it?
I think it's not a matter of let. I think he's frozen by what he sees before him, and he just stands stock still and lets it happen.
As the hand begins to make contact, we see somewhere else. A different time. A different place. we find you sitting on an examiner's table in the middle of a field. There are clouds in the sky, and the light shines down because it's a beautiful spring day. God, when was the last time it was spring? But you're here. There are trees around, and we can hear the sounds of birds. And you're sitting here. What do you look like at this point in time, in this particular life?
I think you see a man in his mid-50s. Think you see someone in a sturdy flannel shirt. Somebody who's done hard work. Ripped jeans. Dirt caked under his nails and calloused hands and thinning hair, and a dimpled smile and an overly relaxed face as he sits on this examiner's table.
Built perfectly and built intentionally, as we see you sitting on the examiner's table with a hand halfway into your belly. There's a man standing there, pale-faced, slicked back black hair, wearing a turtleneck and fine pants and dark dress shoes.
The stranger in the flesh.
He's got one hand in your belly and the other on a screen floating on nothing, looking as code moves quickly down its screen, tapping away at it, looking as if any of it makes any sense to him.
What the fuck is wrong with you? You can't keep doing this, Virgil.
Doing what?
Disobeying me. You are built for a purpose, and you are built to do it right, and every single time you find a way to fuck it up. How is that?
Truly, I don't know what you're talking about.
You feel something inside you squeeze, like you pulled on the wrong thing intentionally.
Of course you don't. Why would you? Okay. Let's see.
What's got you all ruffled?
You see, he turns to look at you from behind his bespectacled eyes.
It's got me ruffled.
Yeah.
It's the fact you won't listen, Virgil. I programmed you to listen, and usually things that are programmed do what they're programmed to do.
I'm just trying to live.
Just trying to live.
You feel something twist inside you again.
You aren't here to live, Virgil.
And he gets real close to you, inspecting your face and the way that it responds to pain. You respond exactly as he designed you to.
Why do you want to live so badly?
I just want a choice.
So did I. But we don't always get what we want now, do we?
I guess we don't.
Oh, Virgil, you sound hurt and upset.
It's because you're elbow deep in my stomach.
Oh, am I?
And he plunges a little deeper.
Does it hurt?
I can take it.
Attaboy. All right.
And he removes his hand from your belly, leaving nothing behind but the smattering of code.
We're going to try this again. And this time, please.
And he puts a hand on your cheek, not quite tenderly, but almost in an examinatory way, admiring his own work.
Don't fail me.
No promises.
And our vision flashes from that back to the present.
Hi, I'm Maia, and this is Maia's Game Room, a narrative actual play anthology featuring short-form, story-driven TTRPGs. Each season tells a new story using a different rules-light system brought to life with sound design, editing, and emotional-rich roleplay. So, if you love cinematic storytelling and character-driven drama, come check out Season 1, set in the haunting world of the Electric State RPG. Just search Maia's Game Room wherever you get your podcasts.
as the hand gets removed from your face and you remember exactly who this is. This is the system, and it's here to talk to you.
Hi.
Need favor.
This probably isn't the best place to talk.
It's fine. No one.
It freezes, pauses for a moment, as if thinking.
Something wrong.
Others moving. Not quite sure. Don't have focus nor time to figure out. How well do you know your congregation? Names, faces.
It's kind of my whole thing, yeah, and I know them.
Good. There are two I need you to take somewhere.
Take somewhere?
Yes, the one known as Clementine and the other known as Letha. Take them to the stacks. Take them to the writer's room. There are memories that need to be extracted. Do this, and the choice of your next life is yours.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Are you serious?
The time has come to make our moves. If they are to be made at all.
Okay. I think at this moment, now preparing to do all of this all over again, I will declare my event. And as always, as Virgil has done once, twice, 100 times over, Virgil will have to run.
Okay.
Okay. All right, I'll go... I'll go get him. To the stacks, you said?
To the stacks, public library.
Okay. All right. Do you want us to meet up with you again, or is this just...
Find the writer. I don't have time for this.
Okay.
Need to leave.
All right.
See you when done.
And just like that, it's gone.
Okay.
And you hear the sound of footsteps running down the hallway. As turning around the corner, you see two members of your congregation that you would know by sight, especially because you were just thinking of them.
Hi.
Virgil.
Clementine, Letha. What are you doing back here? You can't be back here right now.
I thought I saw an old friend come down this way, and I haven't seen them in a while, and I was really hoping to catch up with them.
You
hadn't seen somebody come down by.
I may have.
Virgil, you look like you've seen a ghost or something.
Not quite a ghost, I wouldn't say that. An old friend. Friend might be a strong word.
Are you praying? That makes sense.
Yeah. I need you both to turn back around. I need you to get back out there as subtly as you can. Brother Plemons is going to be up here any minute. He cannot see you here. I want you to go back out to the congregation and then quietly and subtly leave if you can. And I will meet you out there.
Did you just kick us out of the church? Because it kind of felt like you just kicked us out of the church.
Yes, I did. Clementine, are you raising your hand for me? Are you raising your hand for Kendall Makes Films? For Star G and Kendall Makes Films? Who are you raising your hands for?
Hey, whenever Clay puts that, they just raise their hand. We do it at home, too. It's just something we're kind of used to. Yeah.
Has time returned to normal?
That's a wonderful question. As the three of you are engaged in conversation, you notice a clock on the wall, its second hand moving. You can only assume that time is continued.
Is it continued at the same beat that my heart is continuing?
Yes, it seems like things have been fixed for now.
And how long is it until service begins?
10 minutes.
Okay.
You can hear the sounds of footsteps coming up from the way that you just came.
You need to go. Get. Go on, get. Now. Turn around. Please. I'll explain later.
I grab Letha's hand and start going up.
I do not resist, but I am looking at Virgil with just a strange look on my face. Remembering many things, thinking about a spider filled with spiders and how all of our stories just intertwine as Emma's pulling me towards the door that has still not closed.
As the two of you are trying to get out of here before you're seen, can I get a save your skin roll? It can be either one of you, whoever we feel is leading this action. It feels like it might be Clementine. And if you would like to help, you most certainly can, Letha. I would just add +1 to this roll, and if anything bad happens, well, I guess you're both in the shit.
I would love to help. I've followed Clem before. I'm good at it.
Well, then let's make it happen.
I sure do have the dumb little -1 in wits.
Well, now it's a +0 because of the +1 from Letha.
Yeah. I don't get my +1 forward from my embrace chaos, do I, by any chance?
I would say... this would be +1. This would be the next roll you made, so it would be the +1 forward. I will allow it as time is slowly catching back up to itself. So now you get to roll this +1.
Yay! That's a 12.
All right, on a 10 plus, you're in the clear, though it might take a few minutes before the danger has passed. The two of you quickly make it out of these corridors, heading back the way you came, back towards the main area where everyone else is waiting for service. As you, Virgil, hear the sounds of Brother Clemens making his way up the stairs. You can see him in the hallway, and he turns to look at you, almost confused that you're still here rather than further along.
Yeah. Brother Clemens.
Brother Virgil, you okay?
I must admit, I'm not quite feeling myself.
I'm sorry. Are you feeling unwell?
I think I am. You know, our talk about Sister May, I think it got to me a little bit. I'm feeling a little lightheaded.
Can you please hoodwink for me and roll Absolutely. Plus cheek?
Okay. But I get a +1 to this because it's all in pursuit of escaping, yes?
Oh, yes. I would say so.
That's a toasty 12?
Hell yeah. Well, on a 10 plus, they are fooled, at least for the time being. I think Brother Clemens hears this and understandably nods his head with a very grim look. Yes, I know the loss of our dear Sister May. You know, as we just said, I'm sorry if my words somehow got to you.
Oh, no, it's not you. It's not you, Brother Clemens. Honestly, you've been such a boon to our community in this moment.
There's the flash of the edge of pride and hubris. I appreciate your words, but I think in this moment, you, and he puts another hand on your shoulder, should go get some rest. Please, I can take care of this. There are plenty of us here to serve the stranger. And even the stranger rested on the 8th day, am I right?
I'm very grateful for your understanding, Brother Clemens. Thank you.
Of course. Please, take whatever rest you need.
Thank you so much. And fully plays it up as he departs, shoulders slumped, head over just a smidge, hands on stomach, looking smaller, looking weaker as he departs the church.
Yeah. As you basically follow in the same direction as them, Letha and Clementine, when the two of you get back up to the top, crossing the threshold of the door back into the main area, what is it that you do? Do you try to rejoin the rest of the congregation? Do you find somewhere along the side to wait for Brother Virgil, or do you do something else?
Are they singing, or is this part of the sermon, like at the moment we step out? Like, what is, have we stepped into a silent moment and everyone kind of looks at us, or are we under the radar?
I think you're stepping into a moment where people are still a little busy. Brother Clemens, who will be leading the service, is still downstairs, but it is getting closer to the point where things should be starting, so people are waiting, but not necessarily for you. And it's not quite silent, but I do think that there are a few eyes that look your way when you come through the door because they're expecting someone else. And one of those eyes that I think you specifically notice, Letha, is that of Sarah June, the leader of the Walton Community Watch. She's always had it out for you, for one reason or another, but seeing you and Clementine come out from beyond the doors that only the people who work in this church should, she eyes you curiously in the way that a narc does.
I bow slightly, having emerged into such a regal greeting, and then I remember stepping out of a door and bowing as people clapped and some people wept, but that was so long ago, and I'm just holding on to Clem's hand and letting her steer as I tend to. They seem more focused in this situation, though we did just get kicked out of church, and I'm a little confused about that, but it's also not the first time.
With Letha letting you lead the way, where do you lead them, Clementine?
I think Clementine just goes to where they were sitting, grabs her jacket, and then, like, just the single-minded focus is heading out the door. Not even stopping to make pleasantries, not making any excuses for herself, really, or for Letha. Just, she didn't see the system. She didn't hear them, but she knows that they were there and that Virgil was the only one still moving. Whatever Virgil experienced, it was with the system. And if Virgil is telling me to do something, by extension, it may very well be of the system's will. And so just heading straight.
Okay. We see the two of you quickly gather your things and begin to head out the door before service has even started. Are you trying to do so in a way where people won't ask you questions, or do you not particularly care?
Me? Clementine does not care.
How about you, Letha?
I think there's almost a comical moment where when they first go to where they were sitting, Letha's like, oh, we're going to stay through the service, and goes to sit down. And then Letha pulls their hand quickly, so Letha spins, and then they get out front, and Letha's like, oh, donuts, we're going to have fellowship, and reaches for a donut, and then Clem pulls their hand and they spin, and you kind of see this happen in almost an old silent film type way, is all Letha can think about.
I love that I said quietly and subtly, and Clem's like, nope!
Not literally. Oh.
Clem half heard what you said. Clem was like, oh, go to location. It was already perfect. Just like...
So we're clear that you're leaving the church, not caring if people notice.
Yeah. Not storming out, but certainly not doing the...
But leaving
oh,
before
my
you
tummy
should.
Hurt, so I
oh, are you
very...
trying to fake it?
No.
Okay. Well, then, we will just note that your absence is noted.
Oh, the way you said that sounds so damning.
And as the two of you begin to walk outside of the church, leaving behind the large wooden doors carved with images of animals prancing about fields and all of the beautiful natural things that can happen in the sublime, we see the two of you beginning to walk down these steps, these large stone steps that had been carved especially for this church. And we see, as our camera sees, along the road that leads to the church, there's a car parked. It kind of looks like a Ford Taurus, if the Sublime had Ford Tauruses. It's black with tinted windows, and standing beside it is a man doing his best Men in Black impression. Black suit, white t-shirt, black tie, and sunglasses, smoking a cigarette and looking at his watch. As you begin to come down the stairs, Letha, you notice him look up, and partially in the two of you's direction.
Resisting the urge to bow again, it just seems like people are so happy to see me everywhere today. It doesn't feel strange that someone should look at us. We are vibrant, and I take a pill.
What kind of pill do you take?
It's in, like, the variety container, so, like, we'll find out. It's just part of how Letha passes weekends.
Can you roll 2d6 flat for me to see how this may go for you?
See, that was 11, so you should make a wish, and then it'll come true for me.
I love it when a trip goes well. As the two of you are finishing descending the steps, we hear the wooden doors open as Virgil, you come out from behind them, and you see, as we all see, this man in a suit and tie and sunglasses begin to also walk towards them.
So this man is pursuing Clem and Letha, or pursuing, approaching?
Is, yes, I think approaching is the right word. He is going to meet them at the bottom of the stairs where they are starting to walk down. You see, he has almost bronze tan skin with a shaved head. He looks serious.
Okay. I think seeing this, Virgil, almost in an attempt to beat this man to the punch, approaches Clem and Letha, and not boisterously, but loud enough so this man can hear. Thanks you two for volunteering to take me home. I'm not feeling myself today. I'm a little wobbly on my feet. It's a little embarrassing.
I think as the two of you hear this and you see this man begin to walk up to you, it becomes very clear, potentially, what Virgil's intent is. But nevertheless, this man does speak up. Excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't mean to bother the three of you. Would you, in turns to look at you, Clementine, you wouldn't happen to be Clementine Blackthorn, would you?
May I ask who's calling after?
Oh, sorry. And he reaches into his suit jacket and pulls out a badge. My name is Agent 7B14. You can just call me Seeker. I just have a couple of questions for you. I'm with the Scorpio Intelligence Agency. We're sanctioned by County Mayor Owen McQuinley, of course. I just had a couple of questions for you.
Would Clementine have any idea what this is about?
Absolutely not.
Hey, another question. This organization is a
Scorpio Intelligence. The Scorpio Intelligence Agency. You might have heard of them before, in the way that, like, sometimes people talk about, you know, the CIA or like MI6, right? It's not a common thing that people talk about, nor is it actually a government agency. It is a private intelligence agency that is a member of Zodiac Solutions. It's one of its 12 subsidiaries. I just have a couple of questions for you, ma'am. That's all. I'm truly not trying to take too much of any of y'all's time.
I mean, if you can ask those questions in the next 2 minutes, we really do have to get Brother Virgil home.
Of course. And I'm so sorry for holding you all up again. Please, I guess, would you rather us take a step aside away from your friends, or are you okay to...
Is this something that's private? I don't quite understand the nature of what you're asking about. I'm so sorry.
You know what? That's a good point I hadn't said. It might be private, depending on how you feel about it. I had a couple of questions, and he takes out like a little notepad, a leather journal that he's been working in. And you can see as he opens it and flips through some pages that they're scrawling on basically every page. It looks kind of like mad writings to you from afar. And he stops on a page and says, is it correct that a couple of years ago you were potentially on track to be a replacement for one of the Harbingers? Virgil, this is the first time you would probably ever be hearing this information, and Letha and Clementine, the two of you can decide if this is something Letha explicitly knew or not.
I think Letha knew.
I guess that's fair based on your shared memories.
Yeah. Maybe not before, maybe not told before, but after? Mm-hmm. I think after.
After. Does Clementine know that Letha know?
I don't know. How do you feel about that, Rara?
Well, see, the problem right now is Letha's just waiting to see if they need to forcibly remove this memory from this man's head of him asking, or why he's asking, or who hired him to ask. So Letha's a little on edge right now, but they love you.
Do you think that
Clementine knows that Letha knows that I was slotted to be a replacement for the sister?
Clem seems smart enough that they could have at least connected the dots of, like, favors asked, how life was different, at least to an extent. And sometimes I think Letha's not sure what they're talking about, or if they're saying it in the right timeline, or if they're saying it to the right person. So you could have overheard things on accident as well. But also, how does Clem seem with this person in front of us? Like, is Clem one where they look like they're about to have a panic attack or faint or, like, go to blows or just run away? Or is it none of the above?
Clementine seems on edge.
Should have gave her a pill.
This is something that Clementine was proud of and doesn't know why she's no longer. And it wasn't really public, so for this person to be asking about it is very odd, especially right after the system was just in the area. So I think she responds, "I'm curious to know how you came by that information."
Well, let's just say it's Scorpio Intelligence Agency's primary goal to gather intelligence.
And then if it's your primary goal to gather intelligence, I gather that you may already know the answer to this, don't you?
Well, that is true. We have a good sense of...
Just progressively, as this conversation goes longer, Virgil is making himself appear more and more pathetic as this goes on. To place pressure on the trajectory of this conversation.
Yeah, can you give me another hoodwink roll?
Absolutely. I've got a 10.
Okay, on a 10, they are fooled, at least for the time being. I think you have fully sold this act of being really sick and probably needing to get somewhere.
So sick.
I'm so sick right now. And I think that this leaves an opening for you all. If you are trying to just get out of this conversation and go somewhere, you potentially can. I'm going to need a save your skin roll. You'll get advantage because of Virgil's hoodwink, of course.
I mean,
any of you can make anyone who's going to take the lead, and we need to get out of here, which might be Letha.
I will actually do it in this moment because I will do my hush move, which gives me a plus one to saving skin because I can roll with a different stat. So as he's about to say more than I would really like him to say, I'm just going to hold a very shapely finger over my lips and just shh, and all the sound muffles, like the clink of stones, the distant sound of bells, or the conversation even in the building, all becomes like a low dim, like somebody dropped a penny into a nightmare. And because of that, I can roll with plus two for saving my skin.
Go for it.
But I do believe I have to mark a reverie, possibly. No, it does not say I do.
It doesn't look like you have to. Beautiful. Yeah, that's only for cross-reference.
So I can roll with chaos instead of my usual wits.
Yeah.
But you also said advantage.
Yeah, you will also get advantage because of the sick thing.
Beautiful. So this sick thing just rolled a 13 because of advantage and plus two.
You all rolled
too waiting well. I'm waiting for the fallout. This is bad. This is bad that this is happening in the first... game.
As you place your finger over your lips and there's an unnatural silence that falls around everyone and everything, leaving you in a bubble of silence between the four of you, you can see that Agent Seeker seems disturbed as he's mouthing words that just aren't coming out. You can kind of make up what they are by reading his lips, but he's getting more and more upset by the situation. And I think there's in this moment that if any of you wanted to take the hands of the other two and make a break for it, you most certainly could.
So I have a question. So you say one of us can take the hands of the other two and lead the role.
Yes.
So hypothetically, I have I have a move.
Sorry, I should say you won't need to roll save your skin because Letha basically just did that for you.
Yeah, okay.
I'm truly just asking who here wants to take the lead of grabbing the other two and saying
you
have to leave.
Oh, I understand. I'm with you.
Which you can still do.
No, I'm
just
I'm
saying
so
that you
sick,
don't have
Kendall.
To roll for it.
I'm so
You're
sick.
Sick. Oh, so
I couldn't possibly take the lead. I'm so unwell.
Since he did do the move where it helped him escaping them, after doing the shush, there's like a slight look of terror on Letha's face as they grab both the hands. And instantly they remember running down another set of stairs, white marble at the time, holding the hand of someone that looks a lot like Virgil. And they don't really remember what that's all about, but they'd start to descend away from this silence and just have these flashes of all these different things, like the door that won't shut, a carnival that's on fire, two lovers covered in blood in the snow, as they begin to like run away from this force that they do not know why they're afraid of, but they know they should be.
And as the three of you run down the road through alleyways away from this man who you think was following you at a point, but you certainly lost track of a couple of turns ago, you find yourselves in a back alley not too far away from Pizza Pete's and the gas station where the gas pumps never work.
How far are the stacks from here?
The Walton Public Library is on the other side of town. You could definitely walk there if you want, but it will take you longer, and Agent Seeker might be looking for you still. You could also try to call a cab.
Clementine, I think you know who I spoke with. I met briefly with the system. We have to do them a favor. We have to go to the stacks, and they said something about taking memories to the writer. Does that make sense to you? They didn't say whose memories.
Clementine, you would know that the writer is another one of the Harbingers, not one of the public-facing ones that everyone gets to know and worship, one of the ones that sits in the wings behind the curtain and pulls the strings. I wasn't trying to rhyme there, but it kind of worked out.
Have I met the writer before?
There's a chance that you might have. The system often gets into little spats with the writer because the writer tends to like changing things about the sublime that are very irritating to work around.
I think Clementine just... I get it. I don't know whose memories, but I understand why the system asked someone else to handle that.
Yeah, They seemed very urgent, like they couldn't linger for long. I don't know why they're so pressed about it happening right here, right now, but I got the impression that we are under a time crunch to make this happen.
Then let's go. They wanted us specifically.
They wanted you and Letha, both. Is there a reason why? You're smiling. Is there a reason why? I'd love to be clued in.
No. No, it's nice to be important, I think. That's all.
I got the impression that this is... It would not be happening with anyone but the two of you. And so we gotta get there fast. Who is that man back there? Nobody's ever met him before.
I've never met that man a day in my life, and he is... I don't know. I don't know why, what he wants, and it is odd that he asks about the Harbingers right after you meet with that Harbinger.
Yeah. And Kendall, remind me, this is the first time I'm hearing the word specifically, Harbinger?
Harbinger is a term that is used
is commonly
to talk
used.
About.
Okay.
Yes. Right, in fact, you would know that the first followers are assumed to be the predecessors of the Harbingers.
That's what I figured, but I wasn't sure.
As there are seven of them and assumedly seven Harbingers.
All right. Letha, you don't know that man back there, do you?
No, I was going to use a move in a weird reskinned way.
Were you thinking of using cross-reference?
I was thinking about using cross-reference to go through my archive and see if any of this is ringing any fucking bells. The fact that both of us are wanted, the agency that was said, even dear Virgil just being the strange middleman of the situation. When the message could have just come to us.
Yes. I think that's probably something that sticks out to you, if not Clementine, or maybe a little Clementine as well. Why Virgil?
So I would love to mark a, an essence to access that information if possible.
I would let you use, well, I think that the move that I would have you use is already assessed reality, which would use wits. But if you mark that reverie, marking reverie would already give you advantage, but we can skin it as it being cross-reference. And whatever information that you get from assessed reality is coming from your archive of memories.
Beautiful. So roll wit, but with advantage?
Yes.
That could be better. That is a 6.
Okay. On a 6 minus, guess what? You gain experience for failure. But I also get to make a hard move.
No, no, you don't.
I do.
I do.
I do. But I do, in fact, get to make a hard move. As the three of you are having this conversation in the alleyway, you hear the sound of a car rolling up and stopping just a little too fast at one end. And wouldn't you know it, it's the black Ford Taurus with the tinted windows and the man in a suit and tie inside, hopping out of his driver's seat, seeing the three of you and calling out to you, "Hey, I still had a couple of questions. Get back here." And he starts running down the alleyway.
Get back here, damn! Relax!
Speak to us like that.
I have a question.
Yes.
If I have a move, it doesn't necessarily mention companions, but we've been doing like save your skin moves together. So I'm wondering if you would allow me to extend a move, the move of temporal hiccup, to my companions. Ooh.
You can mark 2 anomaly to briefly untether yourself from the flow of time and allowing yourself to move freely while everything else is paused, though anything you do to the physical environment will revert back to its original state when the effect ends.
Would you allow it? It's okay if you, it's okay if not. Because I know it'll set a precedent, because then when I use it again, so I understand if it's a no.
I would say that you can mark 2 anomaly for yourself and 1 anomaly for each additional person you want to bring with you.
God damn.
But that does bring you closer to fracturing. Whoa. If you want to bring all 3 of you, that'll be 4 anomaly you have to mark. Out of 5, that's a lot.
You know what? I'm not going to play it as Kelly. I'll play it as Virgil, because Virgil would do this.
Okay.
So I think in this moment, there is that, of course, that instant surge of panic that we are being hunted and Virgil is being hunted again, and now it's time to run again. And what might not be visible to Letha and Clementine, but the way Virgil is seeing the world right now is, it's almost as though a grid was hugging his skin prior to this, on a path, on a trajectory in this world, and you literally see the lines of the grid slither down his body like a snake and off of his form. And you can see lines of where people would walk, where cars would drive, where all the predictable paths lead, where everything moves in this world and how it moves and how long it takes to get there and how they all weave in and out like this very intricate quilt. And with temporal hiccup, Virgil breaks free of that stitching. So he sees even the next few minutes
of where this man will move, even though it's frozen in time. He knows where the next path will be, and he extends this freedom to both Letha and Clementine as they freely can run as far as they can to the stacks, still seeing trajectories of where people would be moving through the sublime and charting their own for a change as we move.
Letha and Clementine, you see the world around you slow, much like it did before, but in a way that feels slightly off. It's not in the way that feels present in the moment, that cares about time stopping now. This is about how time flows and allowing yourself to move freely through it. Clementine, the best that you can assume is that this is how the system sees the world. Seeing it as a connection of things moving from one to the other, where you've always felt so in the moment about every second that has to pass, not about the seconds yet to come. Yet somehow, when you feel the touch of Virgil on your hand and he extends his ability to untether himself to the two of you, there's something that feels closer to the system than you've ever felt. And Letha, there's something about this moment. As the three of you are running away from Agent Seeker, who's kind of frozen in time behind you, as you all are weaving through cars and things of this nature, there's something about this that feels far too familiar. But is it familiar to you, or is it familiar to you, or maybe to you? It's familiar to all of you. As you remember running through your hometown, away from the hunters who have come to kill everyone. You remember running through alleyways, away from the men with the guns, away from the men with the armor and the men with the heavy boots that stomp on ground and stomp on the people. And you remember seeing the explosions. You remember seeing the fire. And you remember stopping for a moment to take a breath, looking to the person next to you, to a person who looked a lot like Virgil, and standing right at the base of the statue of the stranger standing high and tall above the city, burning to the ground. And you remember seeing Clementine right before it all ended.
I was a girl with dreams so
in the sun's warmth.